It's the Mike O'Mara Show.
Hey there, this is Katie, and I have a great ass.
I am going to eat a pot brownie.
Welcome back.
What are you doing?
It's the Mike O'Mara Show. We're going to talk to Greg Fyth here in just a second. I think we've got him on the line. 877-365-3636. That's the number to call. We'd love to chat with you. This gentleman is a former NTSB investigator and aviation expert. And he came to light, I guess, I think Beth Ann was checking him out on the Today Show when he was talking about the near misses. And I love it when they call it a near miss, when it's actually a near hit.
Yeah, exactly. You
know, it's a near collision.
There's millions of misses every day.
I think it was the late George Carlin that did an actual bit about that. But let's get him on right now, because this is the season when we're all flying all over the country. Greg Fyth, good to have you on the show. How are you, Greg?
Thanks, Mike. I'm happy to be here.
Now, you're from this area, right? Beth Ann informed me you're from Rockville. Is that right?
I grew up there, yeah. I went to Wooten High School and did my flying out at Gaithersburg, Montgomery County Air Park in Frederick.
Cool.
And I still do it today because I'm back on the East Coast on a pretty regular basis.
Well, that's good. The first question I would have for you, Greg, you've been around you know, some of the worst situations that we've had as far as aviation for years here. Should I drink more now before I get on a plane than I used to? I'm just curious about that. It seems that recently we're hearing an awful lot about problems in the skies, a lot of them having to do with air traffic control.
You know, that is the perception. And when you got to keep things in context, Mike. One of the big things is that when you look at the number of total flight operations that occur in the United States, just in the United States on a daily basis, which is well over 30-plus thousand operations a day, you're looking at an equivalent number of operations around the rest of the world. So in the grand scheme of things, aviation here in the United States is extremely safe. However, it can be safer in a variety of different elements and, of course, addressing issues such as that's happened up at JFK Airport with the near mid-airs or the near collisions, as you want to call it.
Now, I was reading today, I think it was in the Post today, that they were they're talking about bringing in kids right out of high school now because there's such a lack of air traffic controllers that are ready to go up there that they're offering bonuses and all sorts of things like this. How serious is the crisis with air traffic control right now? I know we're safer, and because you just don't hear about the disasters. I mean, in fact, the record's been pretty good the last couple of years. But this obviously is a serious problem with air traffic control.
Absolutely, Mike. I mean, it's come to light over the last several years because of the total number of retirements. If you remember back when Ronald Reagan had to fire those controllers because they took an oath and swore that they would not strike against the government, of course, he unloaded, you know, over 5,000 controllers at one time.
That was the body blow that happened with air traffic control that we're still recovering from. Isn't that right?
And actually, we're going to go into the second wave because now we got to replace all those folks, and we have a lot of people coming in, as you just mentioned, that are coming in. They don't have that depth of experience. We don't have a lot of mentors out there, so they're going to be thrust into a lot of the positions at a lot of these high-density airports that could, again, because of their lack of experience, pose a hazard to safety.
Oh, God, and I don't see any way of fixing that. That you know, you can't wave a magic wand and all of a sudden bring experienced controllers into the tower in New York. It can't really happen that way.
You can't, but I think that if the FAA, in doing work with whoever, you know, would have some sort of insight into the process, and I'm just an ACTS investigator, but I would think that, you know, you take controllers out of some of the smaller airports and the smaller facilities who have been on the boards for 10, 15 years, bring them into these high density or high energy areas like a JFK or Dulles or Chicago, and then use those smaller facilities as the, you know, using a baseball term, the minor leagues. That is, put them out there, let them get some experience before you move them into these high-density facilities.
You know, Greg, I want to, and pardon my ignorance here when I'm talking about this, because I'm basing this on friends that I've talked to that are in this business, some of the guys that worked around Dulles and worked in, I think it's Leesburg. There's a facility in Leesburg.
Yeah, a little airport in Leesburg.
There's air traffic control in Leesburg
also. Yeah, it's called the Potomac TRACON.
And he talked about the fact that there are bottlenecks where you move this air traffic through almost like on a highway.
Mm-hmm.
And here's a stupid question, but you know, it seems to me, can't you widen that out a little bit and have more separation? Is it? I don't know anything about, you know, air traffic control and how you move these planes around, but is there anything we can do structurally with the way we manage traffic in the skies that can maybe ease the burden a little bit?
problem we have, Mike, is that the air system itself, the air traffic control system, is built with what they call gateways. That's your funneling, where you take all the traffic that's coming across in a wide expanse of airspace. You have to funnel it now to go into like a Dulles or a JFK or a Chicago O'Hare or Atlanta, a variety of other places. So you've got to get all of these airplanes into one of these corridors, these gateways, to go into the airport, because you have gateways that also leave the airport. That's how you control that traffic. So if you've ever been on the tollway and you have six lanes of traffic and you've got to now funnel it down to two lanes because that the only two toll booths that are open are up ahead, you got to try and move all of those cars into two lanes. You're doing the same thing with airplanes to get them into one or two or even three runways at an airport.
I have read some people say this is an accident waiting to happen. Do you concur with that?
I think that if we don't come up with an alternative method of spacing the traffic out, we are very dependent as a society on convenience.
Right.
We want to be able to travel in the morning and be home for dinner. So, of course, when you look at all of the air traffic and all of the flights that go across country, either east to west or west to east, it's always during these prime hours, so you have high-density traffic. If we could spread it out over 12 or 15 hours, we wouldn't have this congestion problem, but everybody wants to be home at dinner time.
Mm. Well, you go to the airports and see that. I mean, everybody's flying.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know, and it really, I think it's an even larger issue, and we're as guilty of it as anybody else because we take our breaks when everybody else does.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it really speaks to the way other countries even manage their downtime, where you have more flexibility with that. More people can take mm-hmm. breaks at different times. And, you know, in America, we all take our holidays at the exact same time, and we
sure.
all travel at the exact same time. And it might even be getting into that situation where, you know, you can get bonus pay if you hang out when everybody else is taking time off. I don't know. There's so many things that I think that are going to need to be tweaked a little bit in this country when it comes to travel.
We also made air travel more convenient. People that wouldn't have normally taken airplanes to travel on vacation, who were on trains and buses, now, well, up until the gas crisis,
right.
were able to buy $79 fares on, you know, a number of different airlines.
Right.
Well, you know, they were paying the same thing on a bus. Well, why would I spend 12 hours on a bus when I can spend 2 hours on an airplane?
And that also came from deregulation, didn't it?
Exactly. That was the whole principle, was to put into effect the competition so that you could keep these airfares regulated at a lower price and allow more people to fly.
I want to talk to you about, you know, your job and how you handled that psychologically, because it was I was reading your bio and just going down from the Value Jet crash in the Everglades mm-hmm. through all of these disasters. You were the chief investigator. You were the guy that would be on the scene for some of these absolutely horrible,
devastating
disasters. And did that take its toll on you, Greg? I mean, I would imagine that had to be extremely difficult to manage that.
It is. It's a mind over matter game. It's like being a doctor, where you see these traumatic events, but you have to keep reminding yourself that you have to be able to do your job, do it well, because you know in the long run you're going to save someone else's life. And you continually have to remind yourself of why you are. When I was down in the Everglades doing Value Jet, the hardest thing is trying to separate yourself emotionally, because
right.
you go out there, you see pictures of little kids, you see the little shoes. All of a sudden, I mean, that starts to bring it home.
Right.
And it's very difficult sometimes to separate that. And I've had to send people home who couldn't separate it.
Mm-hmm.
It affected them. It affected their performance. And so you have to have that cold shoulder, that cold attitude, but it's not intentional, to the point where you're not thoughtful and you don't have any feelings. It's that I have to do my job, and to do my job well and do it effectively, I have to separate emotion.
When you're talking about doing your job well, I think it's important to point out that what you do, and a lot of Americans hang on that,
mm-hmm.
you know, we know, you know, as far as airline disasters are concerned, we want that black box to be found.
Sure.
We
yeah.
want to find out, you know, the result of this. And you know, you've done amazing things over your career. What are some of the, Beth Ann was, you know, showing me some of the tough airports that they have around the world.
Mm-hmm.
Reagan National right here in Washington, D.C. being one of them. You know, as far as these tough airports, and we had Peter Greenberg on talking about young pilots,
mm-hmm.
you
yeah.
know, as far as the actual flying part of this, you know, take air traffic control out of this equation, even though you shouldn't, is it safer? Are we safer with the actual people that are flying the planes, and when they get to the airports, is that safer now?
let's break that into two pieces.
When I know he gave you an awful lot there, but I'm a nervous, I'm a phobic flyer, so bear with me.
When you look at today's generation of aircraft, we have evolved. You know, you look back, we started flying powered airplanes, not too long ago. We just celebrated the 100-year anniversary of flight with the Wright brothers.
Right. Buzz, so, Buzz, our news guy, actually.
I was there.
You were there, right?
Was you were there.
You covered that one.
Man, that was chilly.
It was just very, chilly, not cold.
Very, very cold back then, yeah.
But when you look at the evolution of what we have in the airplane now with all of the technology, with glass cockpit, with the GPS, we have a tremendous amount of technology that helps pilots not only make better decisions, especially when it comes to flying into adverse weather, but it helps them fly the aircraft. Of course, our training is better. Simulators are better. We can put pilots through better scenarios now, give them a basis of knowledge that we couldn't do even 10 or 15 years ago.
Are the pilots getting younger as a whole? Are they getting? I mean, it seems to me, I swear to God, I flew United Express, and I got off the plane in Portland, Maine, and I swear to God I said this just because I felt like saying it. Mm-hmm. I said, nice flight, young man. Yeah, thanks, Beth Ann. I know I'm getting older. We'll talk to you later.
The interesting thing is because we've created this new realm of flight, that is these regional carriers,
right.
You're seeing younger pilots. But just think about this. If you go back 25 or 30 years when we had just the legacy carriers, they were hiring a lot of their pilots from the military.
Right.
Okay? Now, when you look at the pilots who become pilots in the military, how old were they?
Yeah, they're
in their 20s.
They're 20, 21 years
early
old.
Early 20s. So now you have these young aviators in the military who are flying Mach 2 fighters. You're just seeing that generation now in a regional aircraft. So, you know.
So I shouldn't freak out when I see a guy, seriously, that looks like he's 11 years old, that's in the left-hand seat of the plane that I'm flying.
Have a nice flight, sir. It's really been a pleasure to have you on here, sir.
Just have to remember that the FAA has a heavy hammer, and that is they've put together the most stringent training programs that the airlines are required to train to. If these guys can't cut the mustard, they're not staying with the airline. And they have to demonstrate those skills, abilities, and knowledge every 6 months or annually.
Now, you worked for NTSB for a long time. You're now a consultant, aviation expert. Do the major carriers seek out your advice for how to make things safer? I mean, it's aviation safety is your specialty, right?
Correct. And I go in and I do safety evaluations not only at airlines around the world, but when you look at what we have out there as far as general aviation, that encompasses business aviation. You look at the big Fortune 500 or Fortune 100 companies, they have their own fleet of $30, $40, $50 million airplanes.
Right.
And so I go in and I do safety evaluations for them as well because they have similar problems to those of the airlines. We're all operating in the same airspace.
Can you tell us, are you allowed? I mean, I suppose you won't do this. I have to ask anyway. Can you give us some of your favorites as far as, airlines, particular carriers that you like as far as safety is concerned?
Right now, it's
kind of funny asking that question. Well, let me tell you the one that I don't think is going to crash, Mike. Here's a guy there got to be airlines that are, saying the good ones isn't going to hurt, right?
Yeah, don't tell us who's bad. Tell us who's good.
Who do you admire?
That's left for Peter Greenberg to give you that information.
We didn't get that out of him. He was just saying that, if he has to fly a certain length of time, 37 minutes airtime, he'd rather take the train for 2.5 hours because he's going to get, it rang true with me when he said, I'm worried about getting on a plane with a pilot named Skippy, who's going to get us down there. And so, but the major carriers, I mean, still, when you hear about what I worry about, I'm like every American, Greg, I worry about hearing oil prices, cutting costs, they're laying off employees. Yep. Then I say, if you're laying off people that are, responsible for checking an engine for a crack or something like that, that scares me because I think with the oil prices going up and the airlines making less money, a lot of them facing bankruptcy, at a certain point, that's going to affect their safety record.
Mike, you bring up a very good point. And again, safety is perception. And when you look at it from a perception without a level of knowledge, the FAA requires every single airline to maintain an airplane to a certain standard. If we maintained our automobiles as individuals, like airlines are responsible for maintaining their airplanes, your car would last 75 years in perfect running condition.
Because they replace everything.
Absolutely.
They basically rebuild the engines, right?
They rebuild the engines on a periodic basis. They even rebuild airframes. Why do you think, when you look at UPS, you look at FedEx, you look at a lot of these cargo carriers, they're flying airplanes that are 50 and 60 years old, DC-8s, 707s. The military is still using 707s as tankers. So when you look at the airline business or aviation as a whole, the standards, you look at the book of regulations, the only real industry that's more heavily regulated than aviation is nuclear power plants.
So and that's what we need, though, Greg. We need nuclear-powered planes. That would solve this dependency.
Yeah.
You know, I swear to God, I know I was making a joke there, but really? Wouldn't that kind of solve some things?
Yeah, until the first crash.
Until that the first crash, that's it, Rob. Then you poison everybody. I knew I was missing something on that particular one.
Other than that.
How much government intervention should we have, though, on this? I think that, this is everybody knows my politics and Buzz's politics on this show, and you've heard for years with this particular administration that you want, less and less, less government. I'm somebody who thinks, really, when it comes to safety and the food supply, aviation, all this, you need a little bit more intervention to make sure that we continue our good safety record.
We have quite a bit of intervention on the part of the FAA. What we have a problem with is the FAA, like any other government agency, is restricted by budget. And every time there's a budget cut, everybody takes a hit. So now you have the FAA, who has an enormous responsibility, not only with air traffic, but aviation as a whole. And that encompasses not only here in the United States, but operations outside the United States. It comes down to dollars and manpower. You cut their budget, they have to sit down with a sharp pencil and try and figure out what is issue du jour that we need to take care of today.
Okay, somebody calls, again, this is my last question for you, Greg. Somebody calls from the McCain or the Barack Obama administration. They say, Greg, we want you to head up the FAA. Are we even for? I'll take it one step further. We want you to head up transportation.
Mm-hmm.
What is the single most important thing that we need to fix in this country as far as airline safety?
If you want me to ensure that the FAA doesn't have a cozy relationship with the airlines and they're doing their job, then allow me not only the money to hire more people, but then give me an additional piece of that budget to employ the Department of Transportation's Inspector General to go in and do periodic audits to ensure that the FAA is mandated which is mandated by the Congress to oversee these airlines, is doing their job. I can't do both. I can't ensure that I'm doing all of the things necessary as the FAA as an oversight agency, yet have to put people in the field to go out and make sure that regulatory compliance is occurring, because you have to establish relationships. We did this 20 years ago. It was mandated really by Congress that the FAA establish relationships with the airlines so that we'd have this free flow of information back and forth, this self-confession, if you will.
And it can't work that way, right?
It can't. It can to an extent, but you have to have periodic audit to ensure that, there isn't these relationships that are being abused.
Yeah, Buzz, go ahead.
We had a recent little scandal that's almost been forgotten recently about airline maintenance. A couple of airlines were having some trouble keeping up with maintenance. Now we're not hearing anything. What's happened there?
That's because the focus, because of the public attention drawn to it, the FAA put all of their energy and all of their forces into ensuring compliance by the airlines. And so they took a step back and they said, okay, forget these relationships now. We're going to hold you to the letter of the law.
All right, so good. So you are optimistic, pessimistic for the future of airline. I was being very pessimistic earlier when I said, I don't see it getting better. And I'm not talking about, whether you're, get peanuts or not. But, I mean, as far as just overall,
right.
Are we going to fix this situation ever? Is this ever going to be fixed, Greg?
Absolutely. I mean, on one carrier, I'm working on my second million miles on the carrier. I mean, I spend my life on airplanes. I have great faith and confidence in the airline system, or I wouldn't put myself or my family on board. The fact is that can the system be made better? Absolutely. But it takes a concerted effort. You can't work as an individual. We have to work as a collective for the common goal, the common purpose of increasing safety. But you can't do it with a heavy hammer or this authority that if you mess up, then we're going to come down and penalize you. We have to have a cooperative effort, and it's going to take some time to really establish that with the proper oversights to ensure that the communications and the relationships aren't abused.
Okay, great. Well, good luck and keep up the good work. And I know you've been responsible for figuring out a lot of what these disasters have meant. And
we appreciate it.
That saves lives. Yeah. And thanks a lot. We appreciate you being on the show.
Well, thanks for the opportunity. It's good to talk to you, and I'll be listening to you when I get back to D.C.
Thanks, Greg. Thanks for calling in.
Take care.
We'll talk to you later. That's Greg Feith. He is a former NTSB investigator and aviation expert. And we didn't get a chance to get this guy. We have a pilot from, I'm not sure, United Express, I think we have here. Yes, sir, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello. This is
Yes, are you a pilot for United Express?
No, I'm not. Hey, what? Mike.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Oh, Mike, this is Tom Gavin.
I'm sorry there. He's gone. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take a short break. When we
trickster.
Come back,
you we'll, merry prankster.
We'll have the, that so was the only reason I did that. The Hollywood Buzz will be coming up next, and lots more fun and more thrills. Thanks to Greg. I feel better.
Good.
You see, he told you to have hope. Well, what did I tell you?
You told me the same thing, but
what I told you.
You don't fly a million miles.
I drive.
You drive, all right, and you drink that green beer.
I do.
All right, we'll be right back with more fun and more thrills right after this.
It's the Mike O'Mara Show.